and a good Friday morning, everybody. Welcome in, Chase and Big Joe here on 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe with you today. Big Joe is in the air, headed to Reno as the Blue Raiders will take on the Nevada Wolfpack. So he unfortunately will not be with us today as he is traveling with the Blue Raiders. But I'm excited because I have some of our up-and-comers that you can hear on the Weekend Huddle Saturdays at 9. Of course, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier is here on the ones and twos, and Connor Newt as well.
Hi.
What's your nickname that Joe gave you?
The Rifleman.
The Rifleman.
It hasn't caught on because, like, he uses it once and then he'll never use it again.
I like the speaker.
I liked it better too, but he, you know how he is.
So Connor's hanging out with us today. Connor's in studio right now for the first half of the show. Then Dr. Crane will come in for the second half. So just hanging out with these not so young pups. Well, you kind of are.
But that's okay. I am 12. So.
Yeah, you are 12. So, but excited to have a great show plan. We're going to talk a little high school football here in a few minutes. Head coach at JP2, Rock Batten, going to join us. Trey Wallace at 1:30 from Outkick, as we'll get into the a big slate of college football and also some reporting that he's been doing for Outkick. Chris Sanders at 2 o'clock, and, of course, the award-winning Celebrity Birthdays at 2:45. But starting things off, game number two, the Titans and the Rams, and it is the second-to-last opening day at Old Nissan Stadium coming up on Sunday.
It's going by so fast.
I don't know if it's as big of a deal for you guys that it is for me, but like it's like, I don't know. I'm all about the new stadium. I think great things are going to come with the new stadium. Connor, you know, we're all kind of wrestling guys. We're going to get a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
If Saudi Arabia quits taking them all, you know, but
there's supposed to be a big announcement about that.
Yeah. But, it's weird. It's like, because I think for me, my dad took me there. Mm. My grandfather took me there. You know, they're both gone. So it's like, there's some of those memories, but,
well, I have
cool.
those too. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody does. I'm not trying to say that, you know, make it about me.
Well, but. Here's the thing. This is going to make you feel so old. I don't remember it being called Adelphia.
Yeah.
First thing I remember.
I do feel old. Thanks.
First one I remember was LP Field.
Yeah.
That's
so you missed the Coliseum.
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't around for Coliseum.
But like the first time I was in there was dad took me when they beat Jacksonville mm-hmm. to go to the Super Bowl. And it literally was, everybody was like, hey, we're going to go to the stadium. And Floyd and Jeff Fisher have both told me the story of like, they're on the plane coming back going, hey, we got to go to the stadium.
Yeah.
So like we were there, we were watching Tampa Bay and the Rams that they had on the TVs in the concourse and waiting for the team to get there. And then they come, you know, that we see, you see the buses pulling in to the stadium, mm. which was so cool. They had it on the Jumbotron, and they get out and stuff. So
I think mine was – I was 3, so this was 2007. They were playing the Steelers, and it was maybe the coldest day of my life. It was like 12 degrees outside, and the Steelers were really good. They whooped up on the Titans.
Yeah.
But I just remember seeing the field. This was like – I think Chris Johnson was on this team, and it was –
2000
maybe before
no 2008 was his rookie year.
Yeah.
So 2007 no not yet no. Lindell White
yeah that's right.
Yeah, he would have been there.
And but Vince was a quarterback. Vince, I think. Yeah.
The first football game I saw there was actually Tennessee Vanderbilt that
Ooh.
They played in 2000. My grandfather took me, and then 2001 I finally went to a Titans game with my dad, and that was Titans Jags.
Mm.
So yeah, a little history there. Dr. Crane, how are you?
Good morning. Doing well. I think looking at the whole is like LP Field, Adelphia Coliseum, Nissan Stadium, however you look at it. I just remember the game. I think it was 2008, 2009 when they took on the Ravens. I think it was in the divisional round, and it was super cold, and Kerry Collins was carrying the team down the field, and they ended up losing. I just remember that as a core memory for me. My hands were just frostbit. It was bad.
Yeah. Oh, there's been some cold times there. The Music City Bowl, like what have you.
So couple
the,
of years
the roof
ago.
Will be nice.
Yeah. Well, I was at the divisional game, or no, it was a win and end game against Jacksonville a couple years ago when Mariota put the stiff arm on Jags defender. That was, I said the Steelers game was cold. That was the coldest game ever.
Yeah.
Because it was -6 degrees, I think.
The Sunday night game, Vrabel's first year with, Mariota was hurt. They were playing Indy.
Yeah.
Mariota was hurt, and it was big game Blaine Gabbert. And he had to start. And if the Titans had won, they're in the, it was for the division. It was rainy and cold. It was like
I remember this.
Yeah, I was at that game, and it was fun. They lost, but it was cold. And then the Music City Bowl in 2008 with Vandy and Boston College was really cold on New Year's Eve. So there have definitely been some. But the Titans take on the Rams coming up this Sunday. Can they overcome the week one loss? I think it's interesting. We're going to dive into this a little bit more later in the show because we're going to talk to Coach Batten here in a few minutes. But is Cam being overhyped?
Mm-hmm.
Like people are – because all the former quarterbacks and like we had Tim Hasselbeck on and, you know, others that have watched the tape are like, hey, I really like what I've seen. Like, did you not know that was going to happen?
Yeah.
Because it happens every year. Like, win or lose, if the rookie quarterback looks good – the overhype's going to be there.
Yeah.
But what's so wrong with saying, hey, I watched the film. I like a lot of what I see. I think Tennessee has something if they don't screw it up. Or if they work with him and he develops right, they have something. What's wrong with saying that?
You got to sway one way or another if you're national media, I feel like. Like, it's always, oh, my God, he's so good. And then, oh, my God, he sucks. And a lot of it is from box score watching. Like, sure. A lot of these guys don't actually watch the game, and they'll just look at the stat sheet. And
yeah,
if you look at the stat sheet, Cam Ward, from a statistical standpoint, was less than impressive. I thought he showed some really good things on Sunday. I thought he looked, you know, he had this confidence that you don't see much from a rookie quarterback, and that I get excited about.
He had poise.
Yeah.
You always talk about poise. He had poise.
I compared him to Will Levis. Like, Will Levis's debut... not debut, but his game last year against Chicago, he looked scared. He looked rough. He looked like he was always trying to play hero ball. And ultimately, we know how that one ended when he tried to play hero ball. Cam looked smooth, and he looked cool and calm under pressure, and he looked not afraid to make the right move. And I don't want to say that looked safe, because it did look kind of safe, but he didn't take too many risks. And I liked that in my franchise quarterback. I like seeing a young quarterback that's comfortable with making the right decisions, because ultimately that's how you move the ball down the field and how you score some points. Now, they didn't score many points in the touchdown department, and maybe some of that is on the head coach and the play calling, which was atrocious.
Yep, and maybe, he's got work to do.
And maybe some of that was on you played a top defense in the NFL. But guess what? You're playing another top defense in the NFL this week. So ultimately, I want to see improvement in the play calling department. And not that Cam looked bad, but I want to see improvement on his part. I want to see him take kind of the next step in a bounce-back game after a loss.
Yeah, I look at Cam Ward as a guy that did his homework. I mean, looking at that Denver game. Last week, I was on with Jake, and obviously the weekend show, I expressed so much on how Cam Ward needed to exploit the middle of the field without Dre Greenlaw being out there, and he did. And, you know, TD this past week even mentioned that if you exploit the middle of the field, it's going to work out for you. And he did that. Just unfortunate it didn't work out for him when it was a ball thrown to Chig and or Calvin Ridley, who has to, you know, improve this week. So no. I wouldn't put a lot of the
– show up, you mean? He needs to show up.
Show
that
up.
That would be great.
Yeah, put stick him on his hands, one or the other.
That's illegal, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, cheat if you can't win, you know?
Hey. A wise man once said, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Yeah.
Eddie Guerrero, late great. A couple of texts on our text line if you want to weigh in, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHoundy.com, 7988. He looked like a game day manager. I honestly would argue he is less hyped than the top quarterback draft pick normally is. That's fair. I just think there has been – and I agree with you. I'm kind of taking the side of, like, I think it's been fine.
Yeah.
But you've had like the Orlovskys and, you know, we had Hasselbeck and others that have watched, you know, and know what to look for. And they've said, hey, you know, he looks good. Like he played like he should have. Like so that's kind of where I'm taking this. 'Cause I think there have been people saying like, no, there's been too much hype this week. Everybody's saying like, oh no, he looks too good. And I'm kind of taking the side of like, I don't really think it has been. I think people are just saying, hey, I like what I saw in game one.
Yeah.
How can he grow from game one to game two?
The way I'm looking at it right now is he looked like a rookie quarterback. And that's fine because he is a rookie quarterback.
He did hold on to the ball too long at times. Yeah. Some of those sacks were on him.
Yeah.
That, like,
he made some rookie mistakes.
Sure.
But the thing that I think people are is crossing people's mind is the last two, not number one overall picks, but two of the top drafted quarterbacks in the previous two drafts have set the bar higher than it should be. Jaden Daniels had a historical season in his rookie year. C.J. Stroud did the same thing the year before. I think people are looking at Cam Ward and saying, well, he better do that, otherwise he's a complete failure, and that's just not a realistic way to look at things.
100%. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll talk a little high school football. Rock Batten, the head coach at JP2, is going to join the program. We will talk to him and preview some high school football. Again, reminder tonight at 6 o'clock, Connor and Parker Kelly will have the Game Blitz pregame. We'll then have our Metro Schools Game of the Week coverage beginning at 6:30 as Oakland hosts Pearl Cone.
Oh, yeah.
And I will be on the call for that alongside Coach Bubba Spears. Dr. Crane will be on the sidelines as well. I think that's going to be a fun game.
I can't wait for that one.
3-0 team against an 0-3 team, but the 0-3 does not tell the whole story about Pearl Cone because of who they have played. So we'll talk some high school ball and much more coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Friday. High school football tonight. We'll have our coverage beginning at 6 o'clock with the Game Blitz pregame, and then you can hear coverage of Oakland hosting Pearl Cone at 6:30 with the pregame and kickoff just after 7. But a big game tonight over on the hill at Franklin Road Academy. JP2 heads to take on the Panthers, and we say hello to the head coach of Pope John Paul II. Rock Batten is on the line with us. Coach, how you doing?
Doing great. How you guys doing? Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. We love high school football and talking about different programs. So your team to this point, three games in, what have you learned about your squad?
Oh, man. A good group of guys. We're a group that battles. We've had some miscues these last two games in terms of turnovers, and so we've been trying to correct that. And minimize the big plays, but it's a group that battles, and we've responded in the second half, in a couple games, the first and the third game, after some delays, but it's a group that just sticks together and continues to fight and trying to get better every week. And so this would be a tall test. It's a really good team, so looking forward to see if we can elevate our play and protect the football going into this one.
With two of your first games, the first three games on the road, how much does that help prepare you for a tough environment like FRA can be?
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, our first game was a little bit past Knoxville, and so that was a heck of a travel and getting our guys together and, you know, being with a new staff and players and trying to organize things. It allows us to be a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more relaxed, and not the first time we're moving around. So it's definitely an advantage in terms of just preparation, mental focus, because we've done it twice and made our way around town. So I do think that's a plus for us.
Coach Rock Batten of JP2 is with us, the greatest coach in all the land because he coaches at my alma mater, Pope John Paul II High School. Coach, obviously you had a tough loss against East Robertson, 24-0. Then you come back, bounce back with a win last week against Columbia Academy, 34-21. You guys got a little bit of momentum heading into this one on the road at Franklin Road Academy. What's the message to the locker room as you head into a tough contest?
You know, continue to progress and get better. You know, in that game week two, we turnovers, and we had opportunities. We moved the ball well, but the things we did not do well was we gave up big plays and we turned it over. And so, was better in the third game and limit the big plays. And now we must continue that. And really, we've been efficient besides those, you know, that second game. So it really is just, you know, go into this game, be physical, be fundamentally sound, protect the football, limit the big opportunities. And when we get in the red area, get points and strike when we can. And so we know they have a lot of talent and big up front, and we got to rally to the ball and get their tail back on the ground and create some opportunities with our skill guys as well, because we got a good group.
Coach, obviously you're new to the program at JP2, but you're no stranger to football in Middle Tennessee. You've been all over the place. As you grow kind of what was a struggling program at JP2, what's kind of the mentality you want yourself and your coaching staff and your players to have as things continue to grow?
Well, first thing, just, you know, this was a new year, you know, as far as the last couple of years that the school has had, and, you know, different mentality in terms of the way we approach practice and how we prepare Monday through Thursday, and, you know, getting our young men to buy into the work you must do Monday through Thursday in preparation and practice, being fundamentally sound, being a mentally tough team who handles adversity and learns how to stick together through adversity, because that's football. It's going to be up and down. And being a disciplined team. Those were just really critical things in terms of foundational pieces that we thought was important. And then you had the element of, you know, accountability, holding each other accountable. Our juniors and seniors leading, you know, great teams, you know, our good teams are led by coaches, great teams are led by players, you know, and that's what we want in this program and continue to build off of that.
Coach, along those lines of being a first-year head coach with JP2, I guess going back to the summer into this season now, what's been the most gratifying thing for you as a head coach to mature these guys into being young men going forward?
Well, you know, when you take on a program who've you know, had some struggles the last few years, you never know what you get right in terms of mindset. And probably one of the most gratifying things, we all talk about this as a coaching staff, is seeing our young men. They're excited about learning the game. They're excited about working. They're excited about you know, having success, and seeing them just grow mentally and physically has been great. You know, from where we've come to from the spring to summer, and to where we are now, and understanding how to practice and how to lead, you know. So this group was hungry to be a good program, to be a good team, and to play the game the right way. And seeing these guys embrace that and embrace coaching and hold each other accountable has been great to see that part of the growth, because that's your first thing as a head coach coming to a new program, that you got to battle through that. And I thought our guys embraced it tremendously.
I just, on September 26th, take it easy on my Irish, please. I'm an alumni of Father Ryan, so just please there.
We'll get to that. We'll get to the Vision Cup. We'll get to the Vision Cup. Obviously, it's the Panthers tonight, so.
You got it.
What does FRA do that you're going to have to watch out for?
Well, I'll start offensively. You know, they run the ball really well. Talented running back who makes a lot of guys miss. He's a force. I mean, with the balls in his hands, he can score at any point. And then on the perimeter, they do a good job spreading the ball out. Obviously, you know, the big play guys is the junior Amari, who can just score from anywhere. But that's offensive. They just do some really good things. And I've known Coach Geiser for a long time. He's really creative at what he does. And so that's, you know, those are probably some of the keys. And then defensively, they're a physical group, and they fly around really good linebackers and interior, and put pressure on the quarterback. And they don't give up many big, you know, big plays. They keep it in front, and they tackle really well. So for us, it's going to be, you know, riding to the football, getting guys down. They're going to make some plays. They have playmakers, right? But riding to the football, getting guys down, and doing defense, not giving up the big plays, and really stopping a run, which like I said, they do that well. You got a former offensive line coach being the head coach and an offensive coordinator, so you know they'll do that really well.
Coach, you've been around this area for a long time at coaching high school football. Obviously, we have seen amateur athletics change quite a bit at the college level. How have you seen high school football in the mid-state evolve over the last few years when it comes to the talent and everything involved coming to this area?
Yeah, I've been fortunate to be in this area for a while, from my Vandy time and then obviously coaching college and coaching high school. It's one, there's more talent here. In every way. There's no knock on that area. The late 90s, early 2000s, there was talent then. But you look at some of the teams, it's more spread out across all of Middle Tennessee. But there's a lot more talent. I think that's definitely increased after COVID. But kids are being developed in every way, you know, in terms of the game of football. Coaching has improved in terms of the amount of coaches have on their staff, strength coaches. I mean, just it's exciting to see that just in Tennessee on the positive. And I think that's great for our game, especially when you go down to, I was down in Georgia last year. And so I've seen the game here in Tennessee just evolve in a great way that, I mean, college coaches are flocking here because of all those things I just named. in far as the other pieces of college, you know, you got the college where the money is a part of it. You know, I think that's, you got probably some of that here, but not as crazy as the college world. And hopefully we can keep that under control for sure here in this area. But the evolve of talent and coaches and development is amazing here. And I love it. It's great for our kids and great for our state.
Yeah, the Commodores got a tough one this weekend, but I feel pretty good about them going to South Carolina.
I do as well. I think Coach Lee's got them playing well, and I mean, they got talent. They've done a good job in all season, you know, getting guys, getting better up front on both sides of the ball. It's exciting to see. I mean, what they did last week, you know, putting up the points they did in the second half, you know, 34 points to beat Virginia Tech. But I'm excited about that team and obviously the huge support of Coach Lee, and expecting some big things for them tomorrow in South Carolina. That'll be major.
Coach, I'll end with this. I didn't want to start with it. I'm actually a FRA alum, but – Best of luck tonight.
We appreciate that out.
I had to throw it out. But seriously, appreciate you, and you've always been great to come on when we talk high school football, wherever you have been. But we appreciate it. Best of luck tonight against the Panthers.
Thanks so much. I appreciate you guys supporting high school football in Tennessee. Thank you, guys.
Go Knights, Coach. Go Knights.
Go Knights. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Rock Batten joining us here on the program. And again, high school football, you know, means the world to these guys here, and Nick and Connor, and also myself and Big Joe. So we're always happy to highlight high school football. And I'll be calling Oakland and Pearl Cone, and you'll be, you know, obviously here producing. But
doing
I think it could be a good game between the Knights and Panthers tonight.
So. It's going to be a good one. Yep. And those are two programs that mean the world to me, obviously.
Sure.
I'm an alumni of JP2, so my heart will always lie there. But Coach Geis and company, Coach Geis was my coach in high school. So. Yeah. A lot of that coaching staff that took care of me in high school is over at FRA now, and I did some work with them last year as well. So I'm very split. I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, it's a tough one for sure, but that'll be a good one. And you'll have all the coverage and the scores coming up tonight after our Metro Schools Game of the Week, presented by Strike and Spare Family Fun Centers with the Game Blitz. Looking forward to that. We'll get back into the Titans. Coming up next, is there too much hype with Cam Ward after just one game? And what do you want to see from game one to game number two? We'll discuss that. Chase and Big Joe, Connor and Nick in today, 102.5 The Game. A little Edge or Adam Copeland bringing us back on this Friday.
It's just Edge. We don't acknowledge Cope.
You got some wrestling nuts here, so just be prepared today. Chase and Big Joe, but Connor Newt, Nick Frazier with you today. Joe is traveling. He has checked in. They are... I think on the plane now, getting ready to head to Nevada, as MTSU will take on the Wolfpack. So safe travels to Joe and the Blue Raiders. But talking and appreciate Rock Batten for joining us. Talking about Titans and the hype with Cam Ward. Game one to game two. You know, you always hear coaches talk about, I want to see him grow from year one to year two. But it's game to game as well. You look at the things that Cam needs to improve upon from the game against the Broncos. There were times, especially at the end of the game, he held onto the ball too long. Those sacks were on him. That, you know, you have an offensive line that's deficient. J.C. Latham is a problem. Like, it looks like he's going to be without him.
Mm-hmm.
So you now have to adjust. You may not have time to get to that third, fourth read. You know, and he also is going to have to learn that sometimes you're going to eat the sack. You're going to have to do that, or you're going to have to try and roll out and get rid of the ball best you can. But I was watching him some, and you could see him like trying to look through one, two, three, four. Well, by that time, the pass rush was already on him. So I want to see, and this defense is just as good, so I want to see that thought process speed up for him a little bit.
Yeah, and you mentioned a problem. I mean, J.C. Latham looks like he's going to be out. That's probably your main blocker against Jared Verse, who's the star edge over at LA, played at Florida State, is a future All-Pro. He's that damn good. That's going to be a problem because now you got to work a little bit quicker. You don't have time to, you know, do, like you said, your one, two, three. Okay, there's my fourth read. He's open. The other thing here is, even if your first read is open, your first read didn't look too good last week, and that was Calvin Ridley.
Yeah, because he could catch the ball.
Yeah. So if he doesn't catch the ball, what other options do you have? Do you have Alec Iomanner across the middle who caught some balls, probably caught a big one that should have been challenged but wasn't because we don't know the rules. You have some other guy. So you have some, I mean, Van Jefferson's got to do something. Tyler Lockett's got to do something because they're veteran guys and they're there for a reason. And the reason is make your rookie quarterback comfortable with receivers. They got to do something. And if they don't do something, then Cam Ward's going to have kind of a similar game than he had last week. Maybe he makes one more crucial mistake that ends up in an interception or a strip sack or something like that that causes a turnover. But I don't put all of this on Cam Ward. The sacks were his fault. But other than that, I thought Cam Ward had a great day. I think he's fine. I think he knows what he's doing. It's a matter of can the pieces around him do what they need to do to make him look successful.
Here's what we got from practice just now. Teron Davenport putting this out. Brian Callahan said J.C. Latham ruled himself out, so he will be out. Callahan also said Tavondre Sweat will be out. Johnny Hecker will be the eighth captain. He goes on to say Tavondre Sweat didn't get enough practice, get enough time practice-wise to get going and come back per Callahan. So
that's a Callahan problem to me.
So no T-Sweat.
That's a Callahan problem to me. Now, I understand if Tavondre Sweat's injured, but don't do this, oh, you have a boo-boo, you can't practice thing.
Yeah.
Hold your guys accountable.
He also said Ole Udo isn't for sure the guy that will replace Latham at right tackle this week.
Oh, boy.
Corey Levin.
Hopefully it is Corey Levin, but you
can
don't.
Can Levin play tackle?
I mean, he's that utility offensive lineman because they put him at center. They've put him at guard. I mean, if I don't think he would play tackle, but if he is that option, oh boy, is why I say that.
Yeah.
Because Ole Udo and Corey Levin are your two guys to choose from.
I think he could throw Jackson Slater in that conversation, too.
Yeah.
He's a rookie, but he's versatile enough to play that position, I think.
I'm going to ask maybe a dumb question, but Skoronski played tackle in college. Could you not move him over and put Levin at guard?
You probably could.
Some critical thinking there, guys.
I think it comes down to Bill Callahan and the comfortability of moving players around.
I mean, he hasn't played tackle in the...
Right. I mean, if DEFCON 5, if that's the case, yeah, put him at right tackle or move Dan Moore Jr. to right tackle and put Skoronski at left tackle if that's the case.
How about Brandon Crenshaw Dixon?
Yeah, I think that might be a guy to look at.
He's on the roster.
Yeah, that might be a guy to look at, though, because Brian Callahan did mention in one of the press conferences previously that they had to hold on to guys that they think they can mold. And he made the cuts. They think this is a guy they can mold into being a good, productive offensive lineman. So maybe that is a possible option.
Blake Hance.
The problem is you're naming all these guys that are on the roster. And good on them for being on the roster. That is a steep, steep drop-off from J.C. Latham to whatever guy. Yeah.
Ole Udo. I mean, that's all you have, though. I mean,
I get it, but that's the point. It's a bad... That's just roster construction.
You guys mentioned earlier about Cam Ward and how do you see him developing as a quarterback in the NFL. I think primarily it's the checks at the offensive line. Like before the play even begins, you're audibling certain things, you're picking up certain blitzes. Because if you look at the Rams when they went up against Houston, they brought in a lot of different stunts out on the outside with Byron Young and Jared Verse. Like that's something you're going to have to look at as a rookie quarterback. Sure, the offensive line may not be as productive as a lot of others across the league, but if you look at Cam Ward as a whole, as just a product, as a quarterback, and see that he's making adjustments at the line before the snap, that's how you can see your quarterback's progressing, not because the offensive line is that bad.
So that's, again, the reports from Teron and others. Teron also says that Quandre Diggs was not out there at practice, but I don't think Brian Callahan gave an injury designation for him yet. So
that's not as massive a deal.
He might be.
Amani Hooker's out there, so
right.
You'll be fine.
Khalil Mullins also returned to practice.
Yippee!
After not practicing.
Our fourth running back is back at practice, everyone. Get excited.
You working for the team now?
Sorry. We? I always harp on people, too, that say we when talking about.
I do, too. That's why I just called you out.
That's why.
I'm going to be that guy.
I do it off the air when I'm talking as a fan. Like, if I'm talking about Kentucky, I will say we.
It's so funny because, like, when I was not doing this, I did it, too.
Yeah.
And so, like, I hear friends that are like, you know, you talk about the Titans, like, well, we got to do better, and we got to do this, and now it just bugs me. I don't say anything. I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But it's like,
well, you just were.
I was to you, but you're different. You're in this now. Like yeah. You know, they're not in this.
I get very upset when people on the air.
The only thing that I would say we for would be MTSU because I went there.
Yeah.
And FRA.
Yep.
And I guess I could hypothetically, technically say it with the Predators because I am, like, I'm on the broadcast. I am a team employee, but I don't.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's a dumb pet peeve, but that's just that's kind of what it is. But yeah, so not having Latham this week is what Latham and Sweat. That's not good. Let's see. Teron also says. Legarius Sneed had a good week of practice per Brian Callahan. The volume increased, and Callahan liked what Sneed did in the limited snaps last week. Callahan made a point, to make sure Sneed is fully aware of the plan this week, which could include increased snaps. He likened it to Micah Parsons in week one after not practicing in camp and having an increased workload in week two. It does seem like that. There was miscommunication last week between coaches and Sneed on what the plan was.
And coaches and media on the plan for Sneed.
You could obviously tell that Sneed was a little put out after the game when he basically set out the entire second half. So it seems like Callahan made it a point to say, hey, you know, this is what it is this week, and we're going to make sure that he understands what it is as well.
Good. That's accountability. I mean, that's what you expect in a head coach, and that's kind of what he's been lacking to this point. Now, I always compare the Titans to the Predators on some level because I guess it's just because they're the two teams here in Nashville, but the Titans' mentality is always, from a front office standpoint and a head coaching, you know, philosophy standpoint, has always been kind of the opposite of the Predators. Like, the Titans are never usually accountable. It's always, you know, someone else's fault, and the Predators aren't.
Yeah.
The Predators will tell you everything you need to hear. And maybe more than what you need to hear. I mean, Barry Trotz has come on these airwaves for a full hour when we ask him three questions.
Yeah, so 100%.
That's just kind of...
He's detailed.
Yeah.
He's detailed.
So, and I think you got to be detailed.
Yeah. Jim Wyatt putting out that Callahan said he likes what Chim Dike has done and thinks he's earned more opportunities at receiver. If he can catch the ball, he's earned a lot of opportunities because nobody could catch last week.
Yeah, I mean, and he's fast. You need fast. I thought he looked great at returning punts and kicks.
71 yards. I mean, that was the longest return they had since like 2018.
I thought they were going to get some energy from that, but no, I was wrong, apparently. Yeah.
So what? Okay, so if Callahan, we'll talk about this coming up next. If Callahan is saying that DK's earned more opportunities at receiver, who's earned less opportunities? We'll discuss that coming up next. Chasing Big Joe. Big Joe is on a plane today, so Connor Newt, Nick Frazier hanging out with us throughout the show. We'll talk to Trey Wallace at 1:30, Chris Sanders at 2. More coming. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Friday, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, and we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So we asked this question. Brian Callahan just said that he expects Chim Dike to get more opportunities after the way he's practiced and played. So who gets less opportunities? Calvin Ridley is the guy you're paying the most money to, but he couldn't catch a cold last week. The ball was hitting him right in the hands. Big Joe surmised that he's afraid to go over the middle and getting hit. He couldn't catch last week. I don't know what it was.
I don't subscribe to that. Sorry, Joe.
I thought Elik Iomanner had good and bad moments. He was targeted a lot. You know, there was a catch, obviously, that should have been challenged. We've talked about that at nauseam this week. Lockett got targeted twice, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so do you his targets? Bryce Oliver was kind of the same thing. So are you adding him to the mix, or are you taking away from somebody?
It feels like when you said that, I've been thinking about it all break. It comes between two guys, and it's two veterans, Tyler Lockett and Van Jefferson.
Yeah, and I didn't even mention Jefferson.
Exactly. Which of those two do you want to just subtract from the equation to get a young guy involved? And I think it would be Jefferson if I had to choose between those two, just because I think Tyler Lockett still has a little bit left in the gas, not as like an all-pro level receiver, but I think he's kind of the guy that you hope can establish some leadership in Cam Ward and build some chemistry with the receivers.
I just don't know what's left.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, you look at his – and stats don't tell you everything, but you look at his stats the last few years and how much they've diminished.
Yeah.
But
you also have to think he's been in a crowded receiver room over in Seattle.
Yeah, true.
You had DK Metcalf. You had Jackson Smith and Jigba. There's another one out there that doing some stuff
here's
out
the
there
thing.
Now too. But
this is a crowded receiver room too.
Right.
It's not a very good one, at least on paper. But, I mean, you got 2 fourth-round picks that are fighting for a spot.
Mm-hmm.
You have an undrafted guy that made the team this year and Oliver that's fighting for a spot. You got veterans. Van Jefferson, who's been, you know, just has never really panned out the way that, you know, anyone had hoped. So,
yeah.
I mean, you're hoping that there's going to be some fight with these guys. You know, my guess is Ridley's going to bounce back.
I think so, too.
Like, I think he's going to bounce back this week. You know, they showed, of course, the social media team put videos of him on the jugs machine and doing one-handed catches and things like that. Because, you know,
he's fine, everyone.
He's fine. Two-tone till I die.
Yeah.
You know, but
the Feedia loves that one, too.
The what?
The Feedia. Fan media.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's good.
Well.
We might have to roll with that.
I'll coin it. It's mine now.
Oh, that's fine. I'm giving you props, saying that
it's from someone else, but I'm claiming it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, there are no new ideas.
Yeah. So, every idea has been used before.
Yeah. But anyway, I think he's going to bounce back. But look, if Chim Dike with his speed can give Cam Ward another weapon, then go ahead and do it. You guys probably heard. Well, I know Dr. Crane did because he was here. What Big Joe said they should do.
Restrepo.
Yes.
Catch the strep.
Yep.
Sickness you want to have, baby.
Yeah. I heard him say that, and I kind of sided with you on that one, Chase. Sure. Not this week. We're not ready.
I'm with you.
It's been 1 week. Give these guys you have out there an opportunity to bounce back and prove that they belong. Now, if we get to like week 10 after the bye and things are going south and, you know, you're still not getting the same production, sure, throw the kid out there. But not now. It's week 2, and that's week 1 overreaction season, I understand. But I don't understand what Restrepo can provide you in week 2 that you don't think you can get the same results out of a Bryce Oliver or Chim Dike or even some of your veteran guys like Lockett or Jefferson.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
I'm with you. But, I mean, I think you got to try anything at this point.
Right.
You know, for this team. I think you're going to see Pollard probably. How many? Let's see. Let me look at the box score. But I think you could see Pollard factoring into the pass game a little bit more this week. You know, that could be an option.
They're just going to throw stuff at the wall and hope it sticks. And
they're going to throw stuff at Calvin Ridley's hands and hope that it sticks.
Well, that's on Calvin Ridley to make it stick. Don't have bricks for hands.
I mean, last week, Pollard had one reception for 29 yards.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the longest reception of the day.
Yeah. And I got that was early in the game, too. I was like, oh, they've got some juice to them. And then, obviously,
fell
off.
Both of you say over or under to this.
Okay.
Calvin Ridley targeted 8 times last week. Over or under?
Over.
Over.
I would agree. 4 receptions.
Over.
I would agree.
Yeah, over.
Yeah. Chigakonkwo targeted 4 times last week.
Over.
Under.
Ooh, why?
I think Gunnar Helm is the next tight end of this franchise.
Targeted twice last week.
Yeah, he'll get more targets. I'd say about 4 or 5.
I think I'm with him on that.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought Chig looked fine when he was getting
targets. He had 3 catches.
Yeah, he had one big run.
Yeah.
Not run, but...
Catch, yeah.
Yeah.
I just think Gunnar Helm's more explosive when he's thrown at the ball, when the ball's thrown at him.
Yeah. And he had that catch. That was a catch. I will die on that hill that they ruled not a catch.
Yeah, I think it was a catch, too.
Because Sean Payton can't keep his hand off the challenge flag.
Alec Iomanner targeted 7 times last week.
Under.
I'm going to go under as well.
Under.
Yeah.
I say under. He only caught 2 of them. Should have been 3.
Yeah.
But caught 2. I say under as well. Bryce Oliver. 1 target last week.
I think it'll be about the same, but I'll say over.
Yeah, over.
Tyler Lockett, one target.
Over.
Over. I agree. I think try and get the ball to him more. Chim DK, one target.
Same with Bryce Oliver. Maybe
I think,
over.
I think over because of what the coach said.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm going to say over. I'm with you that I think you dial back some on Io Manor, maybe give DK more, dial back or maybe the same with Chig, and try and give Helm more.
Yeah, I think when you watch the Titans game last Sunday, it just seemed one-dimensional. Like, don't get me wrong, they had a run game. It's just it was the same play almost every single time they did it. And when you throw the ball, you're targeting certain players, especially Calvin Ridley and Alec Io Manor. That just makes you one-dimensional. That you're throwing behind, you know, you're throwing behind the eight ball at that point, essentially.
Right. A text from 2765 on Cam Ward. You know, what he needs to do better, hanging on to the ball. I think at the end of the game, he knew he had to make plays and was trying to look through more reads than normal because he had to push the ball downfield. That's probably fair.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually.
7829 disagrees. He says Gunnar Helm is not more explosive. I think he'll be more reliable, but Chig breaks tackles and is legit and he has legit speed.
That's the reason, because Frazier can tell you, I've made this comparison a lot, especially when they had the three tight ends. Chig is the fast one.
Yeah.
Josh Wiley relied on his strength. Gunnar Helm doesn't have either of those traits, but I think he's more of the well-rounded, reliable safety blanket of a tight end. So
yeah, and I think he's going to catch a lot of footballs.
I do too.
In his career. I mean, he just I don't know. I think I'm with you. And you can remember all the mock drafts that we did. There were two guys that I had in every one, Gunnar Helm and Chim DK. Now, I had DK later than the fourth round and called him something different.
Still had him, though. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, still had him.
The Oracle. Yes. You see it all.
Yeah, something like that. 615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I am fired up for college football tomorrow.
Yes.
Because there are two games in our area that I think could steal the weekend. We will discuss that coming up next in hour number two. Chasing Big Joe with Connor and Nick today, 102.5 The Game.